Love. Some would say it took a backseat when the pandemic forced us apart. As a family-run and proudly Canadian-owned company, Charm Diamond Centers saw the need to bring us together with tales of love and created the Canadian Love Map podcast. Since then, we've shared hundreds of real, uplifting stories that prove love conquers all. So thank you for listening. We couldn't do it without you. And remember, love starts here. What the world needs now is love. More love.
Stars literally aligned.
He's always been the one.
There's someone out there for everyone.
I'm Nancy Regan, your host on the Canadian Love Map. We are on a journey to uncover and share love stories of all kinds.
He's never forgotten to bring me flowers.
We're hoping we're going to give a little good news to this world.
Even in these dark times, the life continues to go on.
It's all about compassion, devotion, adventure, and of course, love.
Everybody needs somebody. Everybody needs love.
This is the Canadian Love Map.
Well, love is the most important thing.
I also think that my kids, you know, I think they're proud of what their mom does. That means a lot to me because we all went through this together. My kids were profoundly impacted and struggled a lot through the losing their dad. And the fact that we can recognize that he was a part of what I'm now creating with him because of him, I think it would make him feel very proud as well.
Today's love story belongs to Deborah Bakhti. Deb was a woman with a clear path in life. She had her dream career and a happy family. But her work as a leader in the seniors care industry suddenly collided with her personal life. Her husband, Ty, was diagnosed with an extremely rare disease. When he was admitted to a long-term care home, Deb was forced to adopt a new role, that of a resident's wife. The next 4 years became a profound, life-changing experience. She stepped away from her career, compelled by a new mission to ensure that anyone needing care be met with love and empathy as well. 7 years later, inspired by Ty, she is changing the lives of residents, families, and staff. This is the Canadian Love Map. Deb, welcome to the Canadian Love Map.
Thank you so much for having me.
I have so much I want to ask you about your story, and I think it's going to be an inspiration to a lot of people. I want to start, though, by talking about your inspiration. Tell me about Ty.
Oh, we're going to start there, are we?
Is that okay?
You know, what's interesting is that today is Rare Disease Day, and Ty was diagnosed with a rare disease that at the time only 400 people in the world had been diagnosed with.
400?
Yeah. We had been married a long, long time before he got sick and our two kids. And so, you know, when you ask the question, tell me about Ty, it's like, where do I even start? You know, he was this larger than life, charismatic, effervescent human being that I adored and drove me crazy at the same time.
That's a husband.
Right? And he was the chef. His passion was cooking and expressing his love through food. And then, you know, out of the blue, he starts getting sick and we get this crazy disease that took us almost 2 years to diagnose. And then, you know, that became the essence of the relationship, was trying to find out what was wrong with him and if we could cure him. To then getting the diagnosis that this was an incurable disease.
You've really kind of whet my appetite to hear more about Ty in the before days, just by your description of him. And I'd love to know how the two of you met. How did you come into each other's lives?
Well, it was in a bar, but let me just preface that with I was home from...
No editing.
I was home from university with a friend of mine who knew him. So I met him with... He was with a group of friends and I was with a friend and met him that way. And then, you know, time went by. We managed to reconnect and started dating. And It was interesting because he was 14 years older than me. So
how old were you? So just out of university or on a break from university?
I was probably around 19, so still in school.
Oh, and yes, 14 years is very different then than it might be when you're 50.
Correct.
So what was the reaction around that little bubble you were in of your family, friends?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because it wasn't like the first question asked was, how old are you? How old are you? So he thought I was older. I thought he was younger. And then we kind of did the math. And my parents were not too thrilled, of course. But I don't really think I cared.
Yeah. Right? Did they give him a chance despite the fact that they weren't thrilled? Or did they kind of, you know, push away a little bit?
Yeah, I think they if you call it giving it the chance, I think it was just acquiesce to the reality and recognizing myself and my stubborn self. It's like, well, if you're going to tell me not to do something, well,
yeah,
that's why I don't tell my kids what not to do, right?
Oh, I hear you, sister.
It's not the right approach.
Trust me. My daughter will now say, even if I say something about anything she's doing, she'll say, oh, now you're using reverse psychology on
right.
me. And I'm like, I can't win. Okay, so that was an interesting beginning. And what was it that drew you to him?
Oh, gosh, we're going way back to the 80s. He had this presence about him, this energy. And I'm an introvert and he's an off-the-graph extrovert. And so I think when I was with him, it was just, there was just more excitement. And excitement can have a double-edged sword too. Right. But yeah, just he had this life about him that was just larger than life.
And was he athletic? Was he active?
Yeah, he was a football player and he had tried out for the Hamilton Ticats long before I met him.
Really?
And so, and he played touch football. So when I was first dating him, then I joined a touch football league for the summer because I'm thinking, you know, I got to kind of step it up and. That was an interesting experience. So yeah, he was very involved in sports.
Okay, so we have a more full idea of who he was pre-diagnosis and how much that would have impacted his life.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that journey. How did the two of you absorb the news together? Or did you do it separately, individually more so?
I think I was the one doing all the processing. Now, I worked in seniors care, so I was already in the healthcare sector. And I very quickly and seemingly naturally stepped into the caregiver role. So it all started with an acute episode that ended in hospital. And the neurologist came in and said, I can't even tell you what's going on in his brain. I've never seen anything like it. All I can tell you is that he's got an unusual brain disorder. And it was that moment that I felt the floor just disappear. And I don't think that he was really aware of what was going on. He was an eternal optimist. And up until his dying day, he was convinced he was going to get better and come home. And being aware of that optimism, and I tend to be, I was more of the grounding realist in our relationship. In our family, he was always the glass half full, overflowing in excess.
Almost like he was a helium balloon and you were the one that held onto the string to keep
him
grounded.
And so sometimes I would be framed as that skeptic and always seeing the negative side of things, but I was trying to look at through this lens of reality and also trying to future pace, what is this going to mean and what is it going to look like? So that whole first event then ended up turning into this almost 2 years of chasing a diagnosis, trying to get different specialists looking at his case. And I was ferocious about it.
Oh, I can tell just by looking at your eyes. I'm glad you're across the table from me because I'm not sure if I would see that as much on Zoom. How old were your kids at this time?
They were 11 and 17 when he first got sick.
Whew. Yeah.
So they were about 18 and 23 when he passed away.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't even imagine the difficulty of those years. And difficulty is almost in quotes because it's so much more than that. heartbreaking. How did you manage to navigate it? And I'm sure it has something to do with the ferocity that you talk about. And as I ask that question, I am also heartsick because I think about all the people out there who have deep challenges with their health and no one to be an advocate like you clearly were.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it was a real blessing that I was working in the seniors care sector. I was working as an executive at the corporate level. And at the time, didn't know that Ty's path would be actually moving into a long-term care home at the age of 63. But I don't know if I wasn't working in the business, I would have had the tools and the resources, because our healthcare system is complex and confusing and disjointed, and it's hard for the average person to navigate through it. And I think that my approach was I really took it on as another job. I had to separate the emotion. I had to compartmentalize as I was going through the process. And I mean, I had a notebook full of all of the notes, the appointments. I taped pieces of paper together and created a spreadsheet that whenever I would go in, we would go into a new specialist, I would hand it and he would almost open it up like an accordion. He'd look at the at what I'd created, look at me and go, like, nobody's ever done this.
Wow is the word that comes to mind. Right. Probably was on their lips often.
But there was so many different specialists looking through their lens. I was getting fatigued from having to re-explain the story to a doctor who was half listening. And it also, I felt I need to establish credibility that I'm not just a patient's wife, that I actually know a bit more about this and I can communicate to you, because my end goal was we're going to get a diagnosis.
Well, your role sounds to me like a medical concierge.
Yeah.
That's the phrase that pops into my mind. And if only everyone could have that role fulfilled when they're going through a you know, health challenge.
Well, and there is a whole industry that's opening up, healthcare navigators. And I think more and more people, it's hard for you to even find them because you're not even sure what you're looking for. But I agree with you, Nancy, because it is complex and every area in the sector has their agenda of what they need to get done. And we should be more patient-based, but we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly in acute care, where you're dealing with a transactional reacting to a diagnosis that you're trying to treat. So I think that was my real awareness that this is very transactional and not relational.
Yes. And another image that comes to mind is when you're talking about the Canadian health system right now, it's like, how can we play offense when we're always on defense?
Mm-hmm.
Where we never get, you know, past the midline where we can actually score. And that just feels so discouraging. I don't know what the answer is, but I think you have some ideas having been through this. And I'm really intrigued by your perspective. Did you see him through to the end when Ty actually left, as I say, or died, as other people might say? Were you able to make that transition really into the wife role rather than being in that medical mindset? Or do you feel like you were caught somewhere in the middle?
I think it's a bit of having your foot on the dock and a foot on the boat.
Right.
In that compartmentalizing skill set.
That's a powerful image.
That knowing when to play what role, and I don't mean to sound so about that, but I was with him the day he took his final breath. And for sure, in those hours, it was there as wife and mother of his children. And then there's also the piece of it that the transactional piece that once he's passed away and he was in long-term care, in the long-term care world, you need to make sure that the arrangements are made and the room is cleaned out within 24 hours.
Oof.
So, and having the awareness of working in the business, and I'm not saying that it's necessarily the right approach, but being able to shut off that one part of the brain to then deal with the piece that needs to be done. And it was really, I'm grateful that I worked with a therapist over those few years, because that was the place that I was able to then express and get the support with processing. Mm-hmm. Because the stories we tell ourselves in going through that kind of an emotional journey and loss, and even understanding grief. I had that misconception that you grieve when somebody dies, and she helped me to understand that there is anticipatory grief, mm-hmm. as well as grieving the loss of what no longer is, the family unit that we had. And in the training that I do within seniors care, when I'm working with families, I say, you know, the first time that I was taking our daughter to her Wednesday 7 p.m. soccer game without Ty, mm-hmm. was a loss.
Oh, those firsts, yeah.
And as a society, we don't tend to look at that, what's called disenfranchised grief, but being able to unpack that and work that, because he was dying a death of 1,000 cuts, mm-hmm. right? In a degenerative disease, and people out there that have a family member that they are slowly losing, it does feel like a death by 1,000 cuts. And yet you still need to maintain your work, your parental responsibilities. I had parents, like all of those, and siblings and friends, and trying to, we think that we can manage it all. But the thing is that grief takes up this huge space that we try to not make room for.
Do you feel like, you can tell me anytime if this is too personal a question, but you mentioned your therapist and how pivotal that was for you. And I'm curious about whether part of that was her or him convincing you that you needed to give yourself permission to grieve. Because I feel like all those types of grief that you have mentioned, I think for a lot of us, it's that we expect so much of ourselves to just be able to get on with life, and we don't give ourselves the permission to really be in the dark tunnel, as I call it. You know, mm-hmm. everybody wants to go around that dark tunnel, but you're going to get sucked in sooner or later, and you're going to have to go through it. So was permission, self-permission part of it?
For sure. I think it's creating a space to be able to have a conversation and emotionally break down and not have someone try to make you feel better. She was a master at being able to sit there. And sometimes it would annoy me because I'm thinking, what are you looking at?
Witness.
Do something.
She was just witnessing you.
And the interesting thing is that you wouldn't stay in that state for longer than a few minutes.
Yeah.
But that witnessing is so powerful. And not be trying to fix it, because it's not a fixable thing.
We couldn't share the great stories that we do here on the Canadian Love Map podcast without the amazing support of Charm Diamond Centres. They are Canada's largest family-owned jeweler, and they're proud to be putting love on the map. The folks at Charm Diamond Centres are thrilled to be a part of your love story. So visit charmdiamondcentres.com or one of your local stores. Love starts here. How pivotal was that in terms of your life direction? Not just personally, of course, because your husband was no longer here, your life was going to change, but you also made a very significant change professionally.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting because he passed away April 2015, and it was on that year, it was Easter Monday, and we were able to see, or how do I want to say this? Because Ty was such an extroverted, loved to be the center of attention, I said to the kids, of course your dad would die on Easter Monday, because now we're going to have a recognition of his passing twice every year,
yes.
right? Because Easter Monday becomes different days. And so, you know, so part of that, sometimes you need to be able to bring humor into a situation for some levity.
Yeah.
But I returned to work after 6 days. Mm. And it was a bit of that, well, there's no point in just staying home, and we got to get into our routine. And although we were expecting his passing. He was palliative and end of life. We also weren't expecting it, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it was still a bit of a shock or surprise, but yet there had been all this anticipatory preparation. And so going back to work and back into the routine, and, you know, I think probably rushed it, but we make the decisions that we make. And I think I also felt like work was going to be a good catharsis and a bit of a distraction from that. And I was also, again, working in seniors care. So it wasn't like that 4 years of that experience, it was still very much relevant with the work that I was doing. And I do recall somebody giving the recommendation not to change anything significant in the first year. And I don't know if that's still a rule of thumb.
I've heard it, yeah.
And it wasn't like I was looking to make a move in any way. But I think what I was noticing, the more conversations I was having with people at work and asking me about my experience as a family member as it related to the work that we do in seniors care and long-term care, and then started getting asked to speak to their teams about my family lens. And then noticing that, I thought, okay, well, you know, this is a relevant conversation. And part of the experience was how transactional it felt. And I'd gone through the transactional experience for acute care and understood that. But now my husband's living in a home that he's going to live in until he dies. And the whole admission day experience itself was very transactional. They were running late. I felt like we were being squeezed into this already busy day. And I'm looking at this group of people processing us and thinking, you have no idea. This is one of the hardest, most heartbreaking days of my life. And you're just trying to get through all the paperwork because you got more stuff to do.
You're treating us like a number rather than human beings.
And I think what sparked for me and recognizing in myself is that I've got the qualities of I can lean into a good fight. And that ferociousness I had around pursuing a diagnosis and working in partnership with specialists that I felt could help get us there, that became an awareness that there's a bigger role for me to play and part of Ty's legacy, quite frankly, of what I could be doing to help the sector and the families, because they're both coming together in a suboptimal time in their relationship. And by that, I mean, most families don't want to move their loved one into long-term care. We don't go, oh, you know, my husband gets old and can't take care of himself. I want to put him in a long-term care home. Mm-hmm. And staff, I can now appreciate or feeling the anxiety of meeting a new resident and family and making it all work in an underfunded, overstressed industry. So I decided in 2017 that it was time to retire from my corporate career and start my own company. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 7 years, and have taken the heartbreak and the frustration and the challenges that I experienced as a family, coupled with my knowledge and experience as the business, to become that conduit of sorts to bring conversation and awareness to how important that relationship is. And I think initially it was really more about educating staff on this is how the family feels. And then it really evolved to helping to educate the family with this is how staff, this is their experience, and that you're actually coming together in partnership.
You're a mediator in the best way, I suppose, in trying to help each side see the other's perspective, but also to bridge those two distinct roles, the family, the patient, and the healthcare system. I hear you when you say, you know, everyone's under so much pressure. We've lost so many nurses, mm-hmm. And no wonder. You know, I understand that. But how did it feel as you moved into this role in terms of a sense of calling or purpose to you? Was it just so clear that, yes, this is the way I should be going?
I don't know how clear from a calling standpoint. I think when I made the decision, I was 54 and I think I had this moment of awareness to say, if I'm going to stay in this corporate role, can I do this for another 5 years and really love that? Mm-hmm. And the answer coming back to me was no. I felt like I was not really making the contribution or impact that I wanted to make. And I think I also was reflecting on the losses. So during that time, my husband died in 2015. I'd lost my dad in 2011, living in long-term care, and then my mom in assisted living in 2019. And I think it was just one of those dark soul of the moment reflections of, there's got to be more I can do with my life and my experience. And I wanted to get out of that corporate high-level viewpoint. And I wanted to have more relational, meaningful, heartfelt conversations that I felt could make a difference. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people ask me, well, like, it must have been like, so brave of you to leave your corporate job. And I said, I actually didn't feel it took courage. I kind of took the approach, I'm going to give this a try. And the worst thing that happens is that I fall flat in my face. I can find another corporate job. But if I don't at least try, I'll never know.
Right on.
And I think that it has turned out really well, and I feel a lot more fulfillment. And Ty would love it because I truly talk about him every day. I show pictures, and I've got a really cool video of him that I share in my presentations. I know he didn't sign up for this, but he's coming along for the ride with me. So I still feel we've got a very close connection, and he's been gone for 9 years.
Well, I want to say how much I appreciate you saying that, because I had already, that had gone through my mind that I wanted to ask you about whether you felt he was walking through every day with you. And I thought, no, that's, I edited that out. And I
don't know, just when you said that, I just got the full body chill.
I call them truth bumps.
Yes.
He's in here. Ty is in the room.
I just go, you're talking about me again. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is awesome. So it sounds to me like this has given you such a sense of meaning in your life, being so profoundly helpful to people. But it also, I wonder, did it also bring a sense of meaning to what you went through with Ty and losing him and his whole journey?
Yeah, for sure it does. And I also think that my kids that are 26 and 31 now, I think they're proud of what their mom does. And that means a lot to me, because we all went through this together and it was not a walk in the park. And my kids were profoundly impacted and struggled a lot through the losing their dad. And the fact that we can look back and recognize that he was a part of what I'm now creating with him because of him. Mm-hmm. I think it would make him feel very proud as well.
What are you most proud of what you're accomplishing now?
I feel like when I know that sharing my story and the practical tools and ways of being able to build trust and partnership in these relationships, when I hear somebody say, that completely shifted my perspective, I can now think differently and feel differently about this, because I know that they're going to go back, whether it's a family member interacting with the staff who are taking care of their loved one, or if it's a staff member, that they have discovered a way through the power of storytelling and building that empathy exchange, that is going to transform their relationship. And that is so important to me.
It's like you've given them a key that opens a whole new door.
Yeah.
Yeah. How important is love? That's what this podcast is about. How important is it in healthcare?
It's paramount, right? It goes hand in hand with care. And particularly in long-term care, when you think about a resident living for months or years, building relationship with staff grow to love their residents. Mm-hmm. And sometimes families don't know or appreciate that. There's this limiting belief that people who get paid to care don't really care. And the number of care team members that came to Ty's funeral, I had Chris, who's the he was the recreation manager at the time, deliver a eulogy. That's how close they get. And sometimes we can be afraid to love because there's loss. So there's a holding back. And then we're just ripping ourselves off of the privilege and the experience of what true love can create. And there's different varying levels of love, of course. But it in healthcare, we need more of it. And then that's part of the getting away from being transactional and being more relational in the experience, because they're creating an experience. And I just actually finished doing a family education session this morning. And what I shared with them is, from the thousands of dollars that I spent in therapy, the one pivotal question that she asked me was, I want you to look forward to when Ty is gone. And now I want you to look back to right now. How do you want to remember this time? And how do you want to feel about this time right now?
That's a thought-provoking question and a heart-provoking question.
And with the group of families, a couple of them commented that that question brought them to tears. And yet the power in that question is, how do I want to show up? How do I want to be? And that question also helped to shape, how do I want my children to remember this time in amongst all of the stress and the strain and the trauma that we're dealing with? And those are the moments that we can now talk about looking back on. And, oh, do you remember that time, Taylor, when we went in and the couple of nurses were there and they said, oh, you two look like sisters. And I just was like so thrilled. And we can laugh about it. Yeah. And that's love.
Yeah. And you know, we call it love, call it whatever you like. I think about Brené Brown's work around connection and her belief that it is a fundamental human need. And in our very disconnected world, you know, so many of us, and I can't imagine that it wouldn't be the case for a lot of healthcare professionals, because they've got so much on their plates. It's very easy to disconnect from the humanity, but it actually serves you to connect rather than deplete you.
Yeah.
Is that a fair statement?
Yes. Part of that, what they call compassion fatigue, empathy fatigue. It is that yes, if you go into it knowing your heart will be broken, you will lose this resident, you will lose this loved one. But by holding back, it's not serving you in the now. And I really believe that it'll create regret after, once you've gotten through the darkness because it is a fatigue factor for sure. And I saw this with, there was a younger resident where Ty lived. And I mean, he was only in his 40s. He had been diagnosed with MS. So he had just given up on getting close to any other resident because he had lost so many people.
Yes.
And I mean, that's an extreme example, but yet he was ripping himself off of those relationships as short as they were.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you drain the richness from life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, death is a reality that we all are going to deal with.
Yes, I have a friend who died in 2018, who was a very dear pal of mine, and she was a great proponent of saying we need to honor and celebrate people's last breath in the same way we do their first breath.
Mm-hmm.
And people were shocked by that a little bit, but she was really strong on that, and it's made a difference for me. And I think that's what I'm hearing from what you're saying as well, when we can let people live until they die,
mm-hmm.
rather than focusing on them dying.
Right.
Yeah. Tell me about your podcast.
Oh, yes. The Empathy Exchange. So I had this crazy idea last year I wanted to create a podcast that served two audiences, the families that have a loved one in seniors care and the people who work in seniors care. Because a lot of times the conversations I was having was very separate. So I wanted to be able to bring them both under the tent, so to speak, and with some solo episodes and guest episodes, and whatever we're talking about, to be able to look at it, well, from the lens of a family or the lens of staff members, that they could hear each other's perspective and learn from each other. And I just think this idea of creating an empathy exchange, we tend to think in healthcare that care providers need to be empathetic for the patients, residents, families. But I believe it also works the other way. And when families, if we can spark empathy in them for the care providers and the work that they do, then we're really going to build these long-lasting relationships and relationships that can last after you no longer have your professional relationship in place. So it's been interesting and fun and really having some lovely, interesting conversations that really do serve both audiences.
And I'm sure that Ty is your co-host somehow.
Always even if, fits even himself if, in there.
Exactly. Even if just providing the answers that drop in or the questions that drop into your head.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. If you could use your ferocity and your life experience and your empathy to change the world in a one significant way, what would you do?
I think to infuse more curiosity in all of us, because when we're curious, it cancels out any judgment. And I think that we can tend to jump to judgment very quickly, and then that erodes relationship. When we come into a relationship with curiosity, like pure inquisitive curiosity, I think that we can transform relationships and our own health and well-being.
I love that answer so much because it also speaks to living beyond fear. When we react to other people who we don't know or, you know, we're not understanding of their circumstance with fear, then we distance. Mm-hmm. But if we can lean in with curiosity, the whole world would be a better place.
Wouldn't it though?
Thank you so much for what you're doing and for sharing your story and for changing lives. I'm sure there will be people who listen to this who've been impacted by what you're doing, and they may need a little Kleenex to get through this episode.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks so much for listening to the Canadian Love Map. This podcast is presented and made possible by Charm Diamond Centers. It's hosted by me, Nancy Regan, and is produced and distributed by Podstarter. We love sharing love stories of all kinds, and that could include yours. So do you or someone you know have an uplifting tale to tell? Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram using @CanadianLoveMap or email producer@podstarter.io. We'll be back next week with another love story to add to the map.